Last May, I gave a message here concerning a few of the factors that influence our mental health. And after services that day, a number of people came up to me and commented on that message. Some suggested I do a follow-up, either to elaborate on some of the points that I made or to address some aspects of mental health that I completely overlooked, which there are probably many. Today, I'll do a little of both, although there's still going to be many aspects of mental health that I have to skip over and leave for the experts, because I am not a mental health expert. For a title, then, I guess you could say it's Mental Health Basics Part 2. And we'll start by doing a brief review of the first message. To begin with, we learned a few things by looking at three biblical examples: Elijah, Jonah, and Saul. Elijah just won a great victory over the prophets of Baal, but after fleeing for his life from Queen Jezebel, who vowed to have him killed, he became very depressed. And we can imagine that fearing for your life and the resultant anxiety probably played a big role in his depression. In fact, in the New King James Version, Proverbs 12:25 states, "Anxiety in the heart of man causes depression, but a good word makes it glad." I didn't mention it last time, but it's worth noting that there is a connection between anxiety and depression. We did notice, though, how God helped Elijah by, one, caring for his physical needs, giving him food, water, and an opportunity to sleep. Two, giving him positive encouragement, giving him that good word that he was not alone in his desire to serve God like he thought. Three, putting a purpose in his life by giving him an assignment. He was told to anoint two kings and a prophet. And fourth, providing him with a trustworthy companionship in the form of the prophet that he was to anoint, Elisha. So having her physical needs met, being given positive encouragement, purpose in life, and good companionship can all play a role in helping restore a person to good mental health. Then we went to Jonah, and notice that Jonah also dealt with depression, but that his mental state was influenced first by an initial failure to obey God's instructions. He was supposed to proclaim a warning message to Nineveh about its impending destruction, but he didn't do that. And then when he finally did warn Nineveh, the people there repented, and God spared them. But rather than being happy about God's mercy and the 120,000 or so people whose lives were saved, Jonah got depressed, and he wanted to die. It's only after God got Jonah to recognize his own bad, unmerciful attitude that his health, his mental health, could be restored. And the lesson here was that our mental health can be impacted by, number one, a failure to obey God's instructions, and two, a heart that is not aligned with God. Jonah was selfishly more concerned about his message being validated and that Nineveh be destroyed than he was about the people repenting and being spared. Now, with King Saul, disobedience was also a factor. But in Saul's case, he deliberately and repeatedly disobeyed God's instructions. And when he was confronted about it, he denied disobeying. But when the facts became undeniable, he made excuses or he blamed other people, till finally God removed his spirit from him and allowed a distressing spirit to plague him. Another lesson here is that we don't want to be without the influence of God's Spirit. Just briefly refer to 2 Timothy 1:7, where it tells us, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And if we lose God's Spirit, we can open ourselves up to all sorts of distressing spirits and mental problems. Without God's Spirit, like Saul, we might find it difficult to cope with the feelings of envy, anger, guilt, regret, paranoia, and just general confusion, all of which seem to be a part of the distressing spirit that plagued Saul. We then went to Proverbs 5:23 to emphasize the importance of guarding your heart. In the New Living Translation, it's stated as, guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. And because as a man thinks in his heart, so he is, which is a New King James Version quote from Proverbs 23:7. We learned that for good mental health, it's extremely important to guard our hearts, guard our minds from negative thinking. And we went on to examine 9 different types of what we called ants, the automatic negative thoughts, thoughts to be aware of and to avoid. I'll quickly run through them here. One was just the bad. When we fail to see the bright side of a situation and instead focus always on the bad. Blaming, when we blame others for situations that we should be holding ourselves accountable for. The all or nothing was 3. When we have the mindset that I always do it wrong. I can never get it right. 4 was fortune telling, when we always expect the worst outcome. 5 was guilt feelings, when we overly burden ourselves with feelings of regret. 6 was labeling, when we give ourselves or other people labels, such as spoiled, lazy, dumb, incompetent, something that parents have to be careful with their kids. 7, mind reading, when we impute the motives of other people. 8 was less than, when we constantly compare ourselves with other people and find ourselves falling short. We're always less than them. 9 was if only, and we tell ourselves, I could be happy if only this situation were different. And so we kind of prevent ourselves from ever being in that happy, contented state because there's always something that isn't quite right. 9 negative thought patterns that are not good for our mental health and that we have to guard against. Now, how do we do that? Well, found that the basic general remedy is in Philippians 4, but it basically says, be positive. Now, I can relate an example, although you might find it kind of weird. This past week, I had to drive to Wilsonville for an 8:30 a.m. appointment with an eye care specialist. Since I didn't want to get caught in slow traffic, I got up a little earlier than I usually do. I left at 7:30 in the morning and got there at 8. But when I checked in at the desk, the receptionist told me that my appointment wasn't until the next day. Your appointment is for Thursday. Yeah, I know that. But today, she said, is Wednesday. Wednesday? And I looked at my watch. It was Wednesday. Yes, it's not Thursday. Suddenly, I had an extra day in the week that for some reason or other I hadn't accounted for. And it was a great feeling because I had a lot to do. And I had that extra day to get things done. It was strangely exhilarating. Somehow, maybe because of Labor Day and a weekend trip we took up to Washington, I guess I'd lost track of the days and my sense of time got confused. So I drove 60 miles. I used up a few gallons of gas, all for nothing. But I was happy about it. There was a positive side to it. I think my wife, however, probably was a little bit more concerned about my mental state, though. Anyway, seeing the positive side of things can really affect your mood in a good way. And I had a great day that day. Philippians 4, verse 8 says, Reader's Digest version here, "Whatsoever things are true, noble, just, pure, lovely, of good report, virtuous, and praiseworthy, meditate on these things." Think positive and be confident. Verse 13, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." With Christ there, I can manage all sorts of situations, even confusing the days. So that's a quick overview of what we covered last time concerning mental health. And as I mentioned earlier, a few people suggest that I follow up and elaborate on some of the points I presented and add in other facets of mental health that I did not mention. So I identified 7 such points, some of which, though, I'll have to be very brief about because, again, I'm not a mental health expert. They do mention... they're worthy of mentioning, though. Number 1, patterns of thinking and behavior can be set at a very young age. Patterns of thinking and behavior can be set at a very young age. The manner in which parents talk to their children and treat their children can have long-lasting effects on a child's mental health. We're familiar with Proverbs 22:6. "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it, for better or for worse." If we train up a child the wrong way, it can be difficult to undo the damage. Young children will take what you say literally. Some studies show that by the age of somewhere between 3 and 5, if you discipline children by telling them, doing the labeling thing, that they're dumb, lazy, spoiled, bad, naughty, whatever they're labeled, it'll become a part of their mental self-image and the way they view themselves for a long time. More than one person told me of growing up with constant criticism and negativity and thought that I should emphasize that mental health issues are often and easily passed on from one generation to the next. And it takes considerable effort to recognize that pattern and break the cycle. A child who grows up with constant criticism and negativity will tend to parent their children the same way. Unless they recognize the pattern, they will, by default, refer and revert back to the parenting that they experienced. One person told me that even as an adult, it was difficult to overcome unhealthy negative thinking, and it took professional counseling to help. Which leads to my second point. Good professional counseling can be very helpful. A trained, experienced counselor with values like ours, or at least similar to ours, can help us recognize negative thought patterns, the source of them, how they affect us, and how to work through them. There are church members who have benefited greatly from professional counseling. It's not all psychobabble. A lot of it is very valuable. Number three, mental health problems sometimes involve the body's chemical imbalances and require medication or special diets. I might just say, medical depression is a reality and can require professional help. But again, it's not an issue that I'm qualified to say much more about. Another topic that I'll only briefly acknowledge came up this past weekend when I talked with a church member from the Seattle area who happens to be a professional mental health therapist. I think she said she currently has 42 clients, most of whom are dealing with anxiety and depression. Thought that was kind of interesting. She said, though, and this is my fourth point, addictions play a big role. Addictions cause many mental health issues. But again, it's something that I'm not qualified to go into here. I will mention, though, that United Church of God, the UCG website, has a lot of information under the heading Breaking Free. I think it's a Breaking Free journal that focuses on helping people break free from various addictions, smoking, alcohol, drug abuse, pornography, same-sex attraction, mental disorders, and other forms of dysfunctional behavior. In addition to addictions, the therapist strongly emphasized what I've got now listed as my fifth point: the tremendous value of good relationships, being connected with people, having a friend that sticks closer than a brother, Proverbs 18:24. Knowing that you have trusted, reliable friends who will stick by you in down times. Proverbs 17:17 says, "A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity." And hopefully we have and are striving to be that kind of a friend for everybody else here. We need to remember as well that our life as Christians, it's all about relationships. The Ten Commandments themselves speak to how to build our relationship with God and our fellow man. Early in the book of Genesis, we see that it's not good for man to be alone. And it's not speaking about just the context of marriage. The absence of relationships is loneliness. And loneliness has recently become a social issue. Some call it a crisis because of the suicides, the drug abuse, and the mental problems that are attributed to it. Interesting, I noticed that somebody was mentioning in print that one contributing factor seems now to be the cell phone. The cell phone. Many young people today have more of a relationship with and interact more with their phones than they do with people. And I have to admit, I see it in the high school classrooms. 20 years ago or so, when I was teaching on a regular basis, if I ever gave an assignment and I made it too short, and people got it done in class, and so they had time to kill in class. Well, what would happen? Well, the noise level in the class would go up, and the kids would start talking to each other. But now when I go into substitute teach, if I follow the teacher's plan, give the assignment, and they finish early, It's silent. Well, not always silent, but it's a lot quieter than it used to be. And what are the kids doing? They've got their phone out, and they're interacting with the phone rather than each other. Loneliness, as you might expect, is linked to depression, and the connection between them can be a vicious cycle. Depression can cause you to isolate yourself and feel lonely, and then loneliness makes you more depressed. Staying connected with people and with God is vital for our mental health. Number six, I want to make clear that even when we do our best to obey God, follow his instructions, we can still experience some mental turmoil, and it's okay. We can experience downtimes that are not of our own doing. Mental turmoil is not something we're going to avoid in this life, even if we had perfect godly character. For just one example, let's turn to Matthew 26. Matthew 26. Probably one of the better examples. Matthew 26, we notice that even Jesus experienced times of mental distress. The night before his crucifixion, Matthew 26, verse 36, states, "Then Jesus came with them," his disciples, "to a place called Gethsemane and said to the disciples, 'Sit here while I go and pray over there.' And he took with them Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, and he began to be sorrowful and deeply distressed. Then he said to them, 'My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch with me.'" Just because we experience mental turmoil doesn't mean there's something wrong with us. In fact, if we did not experience sorrow and some mental anguish over some of the situations we see or experience, then there probably would be something wrong with us. We should feel anguish about some of the terrible things that we see going on around us. The prophet Ezekiel, in fact, says that God will show favor to those who sigh and cry because of the abominations they see around them. For reference, that's Ezekiel 9:4. Number seven. Now, I didn't mention this at all in my last message, and one person called me out on it. And because for the two of us, at least, and probably a lot of others, it's a go-to remedy if we're feeling lethargic or down in the dumps. In fact, according to the Mayo Clinic, the Victoria, Australia Department of Health, and a host of other health organizations whose websites I checked on, This particular method is an extremely effective, drug-free, and uncomplicated way of improving your mood and coping with depression and anxiety. Turn to 1 Timothy 4, verse 8 for the answer. 3 years ago, maybe some of you tuned in during the COVID shutdown, I gave an entire video message based on this one passage and how to best interpret it. 1 Timothy 4, verse 8, the Apostle Paul states, "For," here comes the answer, "bodily exercise profits a little, but godliness is profitable for all things, having promise of the life that now is and of that which is to come." Yes, godliness takes a higher priority, but number seven, bodily exercise is profitable, both for physical health and mental health, especially in coping with depression and anxiety. Now, I realize that there are some who would like to interpret that verse using the old King James wording of 1 Timothy 4, verse 8. They'd like to read it, the first part of the phrase is, exercise profits little, so why bother with it? Not accurate. Why? Well, part of it has to do with definition of the word exercise. What we in our very sedentary society would now call vigorous exercise was in Paul's time just a normal part of moving your body through everyday life. When Paul says bodily exercise, he's talking about a much higher level of physical exertion. He's talking about a disciplined, rigorous physical training program, like something a competitive athlete, an Olympic athlete might take part in. And he's saying, yes, there is some benefit to it. In fact, if Paul were speaking directly to us today, I suspect that he'd tell us that exercise would profit us even more now in the 21st century than it did in his time. Why? Well, because most of us, without a planned, deliberate effort to exercise, just don't get any. We don't subject ourselves to that kind of physical activity, the kind of activity that was just a regular part of daily life back then. Today, we sit in cars, buses, trains, airplanes. We sit at desks. We sit in front of computers. We sit in front of the television set. We sit at church. Well, yeah. You know, I think I mentioned in that message before, there was, I think I even referred to, and I can't remember where it was, where they found the book of the law and it was read to the people and they stood for like 2.5 or 3 hours listening to the book of the law. So, something to consider. Well, no. Let's see, where was I? Just people in Paul's time led much more physically active lives. And they didn't have labor-saving devices. They didn't have power saws, tractors, electric mixers, washing machines. They didn't have water faucets, or most of them didn't, I don't think. They drew water from wells by hand, and they had to carry it places. They didn't have cars, buses, trains, airplanes. They did a lot of walking. Again, what we might now call vigorous exercise was, in those times, just a normal part of moving your body through everyday life. So when Paul says in 1 Timothy 4:8 that exercise profits a little, the profit that he's talking about would impact us even more, and not only for our physical health, but also for our mental health, especially when it comes to anxiety and depression. And here are a few statements from the websites that I mentioned earlier. Under the heading, Depression and Anxiety, Exercise Eases Symptoms, it's from the Mayo Clinic. When you have depression or anxiety, exercise often seems like the last thing you want to do. How true. But once you get motivated, exercise can make a big difference. The links between depression, anxiety, and exercise aren't entirely clear, but working out and other forms of physical activity can definitely ease symptoms of depression or anxiety and make you feel better. Exercise may also help keep depression and anxiety from coming back once you are feeling better. From the Victoria, Australia Department of Health, kind of like the way they worded some of these things, they have a bullet point. People who exercise regularly have better mental health and emotional well-being and lower rates of mental illness. Exercise doesn't have to be strenuous, structured, or take a long time to have benefits. Don't necessarily have to take classes at the gym or go to the gym on a regular basis, although I'm sure that would help. It says, taking up exercise seems to reduce the risk of developing mental illness in the first place. It also seems to help in treating some mental health conditions like depression and anxiety, like we mentioned here. Why does exercise make us feel better mentally? The levels of chemicals in the brain, such as serotonin, stress hormones, and endorphins, change for the better when you exercise. Next bullet point here. Regular exercise can help you sleep better. And good sleep helps you manage your mood. Exercise can improve your sense of control, coping ability, and self-esteem. People who exercise regularly often report how good achieving a goal makes them feel. Exercise can help eliminate your negative thoughts. Exercise increases your energy levels. Exercise can reduce skeletal muscle tension, which helps you feel more relaxed. How much exercise is enough? Going back to the Mayo Clinic here. Doing 30 minutes or more of exercise a day for 3 to 5 days a week, 30 minutes or more for 3 to 5 days a week, may significantly improve depression or anxiety symptoms. But smaller amounts of physical activity, as little as 10 to 15 minutes at a time, may make a difference. It may take less time exercising to improve your mood when you do more vigorous activities, such as running or bicycling. I guess the point is, you don't have to exert yourself to the point of having a heart attack to get some benefit. Now, exercise may not be a cure for everybody's mental health, but it definitely helps. Well, brethren, good mental health and good physical health, too, are important factors in helping us become good servants and effectively doing the work that God has called us to. And we can do our part. We can strive for a positive mindset. We can value wise counsel. We can recognize the possible need for medical intervention. We can look out for addictions and be aware of them. We can strengthen our connections with God and with each other. We can realize that we all feel mental distress at times, and that it's okay. And we can strive to be physically active. We do acknowledge that there are situations which will ultimately require God's intervention and healing. But until then, let's be aware of some of the positive steps that we can take to help ensure good mental health, both for ourselves and for those around us.